good morning.
Good afternoon.
Good evening.
Good night.
What are you eating there, Sif?
Some baked chicken and some veggies. Some squash up in here and some peppers, I guess.
Did you know... The show is a weird time to choose to all. You always do lunch at the show. Why don't like right before the show or after the show? You do the lunch as the show.
Well, I'm up early and I always forget to eat in the morning. When I get here, there's no food in my house.
So you have to go cop food.
Yeah. So I just wait till I leave, but then I got to jump on a train and I get here, and then the only thing from the train to here is junk food.
So you have to wait till you get here.
This block.
This block actually has a bunch of healthy options.
It's all right. It's all right.
So what, you got some baked chicken and vegetables?
No. All
right.
Well, some broccoli up in here.
Okay. It looks delicious. Guys, very excited to close out the year with someone who we've talked about getting on the show for a minute. Cornerstone producer of Digging in the Crates.
He's DJ done- before that.
DJ before
that. Mixtapes. You wasn't around in the mixtape era, son.
No, I did not know the Buck Wild mixtape story, so I'll be excited to hear that. And
never walked around 125th Street, mad niggas selling mixtapes on the corner.
Well, no, I was...
SNS, Craig G, Ron G, Doo-Wop, Buck Wild. You know what I'm saying?
No, I was there for a mixtape. It was not that era. It was Repug mixtapes in like 2007 that you would never want. But anyways, Buck Wild is here.
Woo!
And welcome, man.
What up, what up, what up?
Yo, thanks for doing this.
No doubt. Thanks for having me, bro.
It's not us that's having you. It's hip-hop history.
It's hip-hop history that
needs
you.
Hip-hop history, we need you.
It's not that we have you or even want you. It's right. That we need you.
Y'all don't need me, man.
This is a story.
You're a big part.
This is a story that needs to be told, bro. Where does it begin? I mean, obviously, are you always a BX guy from the very beginning?
We moved to the Bronx, I think, I was about 5.
And where were you before that?
Harlem.
Harlem. Harlem World.
Yeah. And I don't claim it, though, but I claim the Bronx. Everyone says, hey, I'm born in Harlem, so I'm always rep Harlem. All my family from Harlem.
No. If you didn't grow up there at all...
If you didn't go to public school.
Right.
Wherever you went to public school, that is where you're from.
That's a very good... Sif, that's a very good delineation.
Yeah. Very good.
Because it's what shapes you.
Yeah.
Public school is what starts to shape you.
No question.
So, for you, where in the Bronx? I'll ask for Sif.
Oh, South Bronx. 138th Street, Cypress Avenue. 141st Street, Cypress Avenue.
Sif, how is that?
Not good.
Not good.
Not back then.
What were your parents doing?
My mom's was working. My pops was in and out. Not really there.
Not really
in and out of house or jail?
Nah, not jail. But, you know,
being around.
He wasn't there, you know? Yeah.
And was your mom into music?
Nah.
So where did this come from?
From my sisters and brothers. It was always records in the house and music. And ever since being young, my sister told me I had to walk around with this Whatnots 45 all the time.
Really?
Word up. I'm like, wow, that's crazy.
That was just something you gravitated to early, and people had records in the house, the 45s around all the time. That's how people got singles. This is in what, the late 70s, early 80s?
It was in the 80s. Late 70s, definitely. Because even thinking about it, it's like I can remember when, I won't say when hip-hop started. Matter of fact, it was when coming in that time, because my brother used to go to like all these jams and shit like that. And it's like I used to be, you know, in a house as a kid. I had a little radio with like a 6-inch woofer or some shit, and I used to try to tape the jams from the fucking window.
Wow, from the window.
Yeah, because like... You got to understand, like, it's a different time, so it's like you would hope, like, okay, the music is kind of loud, so you would get, like, a real faint noise of, you know, of them DJing. And then from seeing people DJ, I used to do shit in the house where it's like I took one record player and put it next to another record player, and I learned how to DJ from the balance knob, from cutting from one side to another. I would take the spindle out, break up pencils, and put them in the middle so I could cut.
wait, explain that second part. What would you do with the pencil?
I would break them.
Okay.
Pencils I have for school, I would take them, I would break them, make them short enough so I could put the records on and get them off quick and DJ back and forth. I learned how to DJ with, you know, balance, because it's like from one side to another. So how you have the right and then you have the left, you're like, okay, I'll use that and go back and forth.
And so it'll be on the right side and then on the left side. I still don't understand the pencil part. Sif, what am I missing?
I think because the spindle was too thin.
It was, remember the big spindles. Right. The old ass record players.
Oh, I see. So it was too high.
Yeah. So you have to go through all that. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Oh, got it. You took out the thing and put the...
Because you had to, like, put the record up high and then jiggle it down.
Yeah.
So he took that piece off. So the pencil's like how...
This is around the B1 era. Like, when a lot of people talk about they DJ, like, they had B1s, but it's like when you live in a hood, everyone don't have B1s. So it's like you make do with what you got.
Absolutely. So much of the early DJ story always involves someone with a belt drive, nasty turntable.
Rubber band.
Yeah, for me, of course. For me, of course, the story is different, but it was like a belt. My parents' belt drive and a CD player was until I could save up. Then I got one turntable. Then I have a turntable on one side. Then you have a nasty belt drive, old one on the other side, until you could eventually get there. So when did you save up, and how did you end up getting turntables?
Sorry, before you get into that, I got an important question. Is there any other type of numbered pencils besides number two?
It's a good question.
Nah.
I never seen...
We got to research that.
Why is it number two
Google.
Pencil?
I don't know, because it's shit.
I never seen a number three, number four pencil.
No one talks about number four pencil. They get slept on.
Yeah, but are those different numbers? They are? What number are they? I got to figure this out. Sorry, Buck. What you're saying was way more interesting. Proceed.
So when did you actually get turntables?
Like, one of my homies, he gave me a turntable, and, well, let's go back. Once, like, the older guys in the neighborhood found out I could DJ, because it's like, I'm thinking I'm only in about second or third grade, so.
Damn.
Yeah.
Seven, 8 years old.
Yeah. And once you learn, it's like, it becomes easy. You know, it's little cats you see on Instagram that could DJ. So, my homeboy Pee Wee, I think he gave me my first set. And it's like, because he had like a whole bunch of B1s. And he's like, yo, here, rock with this. And it's like, that's how I had my first set in the house.
And then what kind of music did you start buying or collecting? Well, you had your siblings' records.
I had some records, but it's like we would go downtown and we would buy like Octopus Break Beats. We would buy the Paul Winley Mardi Gras, like whatever, you know, we could sneak downtown and get. Because, mind, we're not supposed to leave the block. So we would go down to Music Factory, take the train downtown, like me and one of my homies.
And where
like,
was downtown at that time?
42nd.
42nd Street, okay.
Yeah, so we go to 42nd and Music Factory. I'm pretty sure Syph knows what it is.
No, I don't know that one.
Yes, you do.
What? Music Factory on 42nd?
42nd yeah. And what?
Broadway.
On Broadway, okay.
Yeah.
Music, I don't know that one.
That one and Downtown Records.
Downstairs.
We would go to either one. It's like whatever little breaks we could get that we knew of or we found a record, we would go there and we would cop a double. Whatever money we had, we would pull together from allowance or however we could make money and we would cop
and share, and then you could share.
Yeah.
You just have them for y'all to use.
And everybody from that time, it's like no one really was the person to be like, yo, I'm going downtown and cop two records. Everybody always had, you know, dudes that they rock with. If it was a dude who MC'd or another dude who DJ'd, they'd be like, all right, yo, you cop one and I cop one. Be like, all right, yo, I got one heartbeat record. You got one? All right, yo, let bring that over so we could cut.
Right.
So we would share. It was like a community thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the crates was always community. So, you know, unless that was your crew.
And the crates always, like, the person who got serious about music and made it the career was the one who ended up with the crates. You know what I'm saying? Because everybody contributed, right? Everybody always contributed, but then you get older, you start getting into other things, and then you think back, you're like, yo, whatever happened to all them records I had?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Did you end up with the stash?
Nah. I can't even say that. Like, I had some, and it's like, by the time I got to high school, it's like, I just quit. I said, fuck DJ.
And knew you wanted to make beats already?
No.
What do you want to do then?
I just want to buy sneakers and leathers and, you know, go to school nice.
So what was your plan for that?
I don't know how I can make some money, you know?
But you fell out of DJing for a while.
Yeah, it got boring. Like, when you're doing it for so long and it's like, you're like, hey, well, maybe it won't happen. And, you know, even in my school, like, you know, not knowing now everyone who went to school, like, when I was leaving, like, Sean Price was there, Strang was there, Craig G was there, all of these guys was there, but I never really paid attention to it.
Wait,
like,
what school did you went to?
Printing, graphic arts.
Oh, graphic arts.
And it's like, I didn't know all of them till like everything came up later.
Right.
And I was talking to Gemini, the gifted one, the other day, and he's telling me, he's like, yeah. Yo, you know, all of them did go there. He's like, yo, but you wasn't really into that shit. He said, I didn't know you was DJing until we cut school one day.
Right.
And we went to this other cat house, and he had turntables, and I was like, all right, give me the headphones. And I showed him I could DJ. And he's like, yo, I didn't know you could do that. I was like...
Gemini, the gifted one.
Yeah.
You just brought it way back, son.
Wait, did you do the early Gemini, the gifted one?
Yeah, I did two songs for him, Scars and Pain and Story of My Life.
All right, well, so we'll get there in a second. Let's get that. So then what, so when did you jump into the producing side? What did you get? How did you do that?
You had to go back to DJing somewhere.
Yeah, all right, at the end of school, like there's K Capri tapes. I'm buying mixtapes. I was buying everybody mixtapes first. I was buying K Capri because K Capri would always play like the records nobody knew. So I'd always cop kid tapes, and then his tapes started slowing up. Then one of my boys was like, yo, you know, you should just make your own tapes. And it's like, I would just take records and put my records on there. And he's like, yo, you should just do it. And it's like, by this time, you know, I'm out of school. And, you know, I bought two 1200s and I went from there. And it's like, I started making mixtapes. But it's like a lot of cats in my neighborhood didn't know. So when they would find out, like some of my friends were still in school, they would be going to school and people would be talking about it, and they didn't even know till when they found out. It was like, oh, shit, I didn't know that shoe. Why you ain't tell me? What I'm supposed to tell you?
Was it you didn't have the same DJ name or something?
Nah, I never really had a DJ name when we was young.
Oh.
I was just DJing. I just liked it, and it's like I was doing it.
Right.
Because everyone, back then, everyone had the ski or ice or whatever, some shit like that. So it's like you had to go buy some shit like that.
Well, you need to be a ski, an ice, a wizard. Something grand.
Grand wizard.
You need to like be a master or something.
Grand master like Rock Raider.
Exactly. You know?
So, you know, that was the start of it there. You know, from DJing, you know, mixtapes. I met Finesse. And everything happened the way it's supposed to.
After that?
Yeah.
So was it first, you for the production side at first, were you just watching Finesse?
Yeah, I did the internship.
Really? Hanging out in the studio?
Shit, I was with Finesse like every day, like fucking in the morning till nighttime. And it's like,
doing what? Doing whatever he needed?
Nah, like if he was going to studio, we would go to studio. If he had a show, Mike wasn't DJing, then I would DJ for him some of the shows. Wherever it would be, it's like by this time, it's like L was in the picture. We met L at the Hard Pack. You know, he spit for Finesse. Said, yo, he only wanted to spit one rhyme for Finesse. He spit the rhyme and Finesse loved him. You know? Like, we was all together every day. Like, me, Finesse, Big L, Easy LP, and my man OG.
And wait, so the story you just told very briefly, you were there the first time you met Big L.
Yeah.
That's known.
D Wiz brought Big L to Hard Pack.
And do you were
at Rock and Will.
Were you struck by Big L right away?
Hell yeah. Like, here's this young skinny dude where it's like cocky as a motherfucker. And he was like, yo, dog, just bring Finesse down. I only got to kick one rhyme for him.
That's how he did it, in a cocky way.
That's like, how he
that's
came
how he
in.
Talk.
Like,
yo,
oh,
dog,
I only got to do one rhyme.
If I had LP number, I'd call him right now. He'd tell you, one rhyme. One rhyme. But he was just that dope. Like, you never heard, and it's like he was like, what, 16, 17? Never heard nobody rap that good that young. Ness heard him. Ness is like, yo, him. No, and from then, him and Ness' relationship started.
And this whole time, while you're just doing whatever, DJing here and there, doing whatever you have to do, are you also like kind of doing an apprentice type thing with the beats?
Is your phone?
Nah.
Hold on, that is my phone. Let me turn that shit off.
Let me see. How did beats start? At the time, it was even running around with Finesse. I wasn't thinking about beats, but it came to mind. And it's like, after seeing it, because it's like, for one, we used to run around and listen to Finesse. We used to listen to Finesse all day. We listened, like me and my homies, we rode around and listened to Funky Technician to the tape pop. And we had to buy another one. And it didn't hurt that AG was from the hood, too. So AG was like about a good 4 or 5 blocks away. And it's like, when we seen that, it's like, oh, shit, Dre made it. Dre's on records, and Dre was always nice. So Chance meeting in Rock and Will. I'm in Rock and Will, and it's like I walk in to bring a tape, And they like, hey, you know, well, Finesse said he needs a place to make tapes. Yo, can Finesse make mixtapes at your house? I'm like, sure. And me and Finesse, we got cool from there.
And what equipment was Finesse using at that point to produce?
I don't think Finesse was used to a 1200, but it's like, I don't think neither one of us had ours yet.
Oh, really?
Neither one of us. Because remember, that was when he had the second album, Return of the Funky Man.
Mm-hmm.
And Diamond and Show, I think they did the bulk of it.
They were
still
doing the bulk of it. Yeah, it's true.
Even Jazzy, I think, did some.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, Finesse didn't produce like on
Finesse
his first album?
He did the remix for a record. What he did, You Know What I'm About, the remix. That was, I think, the first joint he did, because I remember we was on a Sauce tour. And he had to fly home to do the record and come back because the record had to be turned in.
Right.
You know? And it was another, the Yes You May remix, that was another one. Mm-hmm. All that was around the same time.
All right, so here's the question, because we have to start. Otherwise, we're going to get to the end and go, what are we doing? How do we get from then to this time? Because it's not a huge gap. Yeah, how do we get from...
Easy. Right. I can continue telling the story it was.
All right, keep going.
What do you mean? You're skipping over shit.
No, he's not skipping over shit.
Yes, you are.
What did you have for lunch?
He's skipping over the main record.
I'm gonna break it down.
The Sadat X joint.
It was the Diamond.
Diamond was before that.
Yeah,
Diamond
you
was
fucking up. Hold on, Buck. You fucking up, Peter. Sorry, go ahead, Buck.
Sorry, I forgot that was first.
Diamond gave me my first check, which was for You Can't Front.
You Can't Front. Oh,
which I bought. That's when I bought my
Kendata.
You know.
Who the fuck was Kendata?
That's me, good question.
Me and my man OG, I remember we went and got our 1200 and 950s the same day. And it's like, that was from that time. And we were back from Sauce Tour. Diamond heard the record. He liked it. He took it. He added the strings on it. And that was all she wrote from there. I met OC and Organize and Red Hot Lover Tone and all these RSO, all these guys on the Sauce Tour with Finesse. Mm-hmm. Me and O clicked up when we was on the Sauce Tone. We came back. We started cutting records.
Real quick.
Oh, shit. Yo, what the fuck is
yo,
this?
That's that shit I was telling you about, Kenyatta.
What's this?
Kenyatta.
What's this?
Kenyatta. Yo, that's that Sadat X, Diamond D, and Law Finesse piece.
Oh, okay. All right.
Hey, yo, you know this shit is real.
So don't front, Jack.
Yo, you know this shit is real.
So don't front.
You just had the bass line and the drums.
So don't front, Jack.
And Diamond heard it. He's like, yo, let me put this little part right here in.
Well, By the way, congrats to you for doing that. And also, just more evidence of what a fucking genius Diamond is. That he's like, I got the right weird strings I can add, and it'll go fucking perfect on this.
Yeah, you gotta see Diamond. Diamond rocks back and forth when he hear it. It's like, it's just epic. It was an epic time.
All right, cool,
but this is what I mean by apprentice. So it's like I'm learning.
Right.
Everything, every place I've ever been doing music, it's like I've learned. It's like I've learned from Diamond. I learned from Finesse. I learned from Show. So when we were on tour, it's like we're cutting. We cut most of Word Life before he got his deal.
Right. He so, knows that.
Yeah. So when you look at it, this is the time when it's like, you know, it's not like now where it's like, you know, you get a deal and you can't use none of your records on your demo. But his whole demo was damn near on his album. And before that, I gotta skip back, because before that, it's like I'm forgetting about Stress.
That's around there too,
right? That was before then.
It wasn't before the Diamond record, was
no,
it?
No, Stress is after the Diamond record.
After the Diamond record.
Oh, Stress. Oh, mm-hmm. That's Confusion? Oh,
yes.
Oh, yeah. Because when we came back.
Crush. Kill.
You know, from working with O, then Munch wanted to hear beats. So when Munch wanted to hear beats, it's
I
like,
bet he did.
Now, here he comes.
Here he comes with the word.
Here he comes with the word.
That was one of the joints that they picked. Because it didn't sound like nothing that was out.
Still doesn't.
You know?
Still sounds bonkers.
Shit. This just hit me with so many memories.
Woo-hoo-hoo, this shit right here.
Hard to maintain the pressure on my chest. Excess frustration strikes.
All right, now you're starting to get in a little zone between these couple records.
Yeah, but they all were like the same time. A lot of those. Oh, and we skipped Big L.
This is all the... Well, no, Big L's still a little after this, though, right?
No, Big L is during the same time, right between between Organized and L? OC.
Put it on. Right? No,
you did Put It On?
I did Put It On. I did Danger Zone. I did Eight Is Enough.
Oh, yeah.
Me and Ness Eight did Times Is Hard. Yeah, and it's like I
the
did
Birth
the other,
of Cameron.
Yeah, and I did the other record with Jay-Z and them.
Yeah, the collabo.
Yeah. So... Come on. That record is around the time of Time's Up.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, I'm normally really good at times to an exact science. These are blurry. This is
I forgot you did this.
These are all blurry time-wise.
The time was like this. Big L went quick.
I thought Finesse did this.
Nah.
Put It On was 94. The Organized record was 94.
And Big L is 94.
The Diamond D was 93.
Yeah. And it was a slew of remixes.
Right. So, all of these... So basically, with all of these, there's no some one... In particular story, these are just all joints you're learning to do and working on, and
all this is in the process of working.
And Finesse is hearing them, and Diamond's hearing them, and are they helping you along? Just like, oh, this
nah,
is good.
Nah, right now I'm good.
This is it. Now this is
I'm
all
on
you.
Autopilot.
Now you're on autopilot.
Yeah, and I'm still learning because I'm still early in it. So it's like I'm buying better records, I'm finding drums, I'm finding different loops. So it's like I'm definitely on autopilot because when you look, and back then remember the tunnel, right? Mm-hmm. And when you walk in the tunnel, if your record is not playing. It's frustration. So then it's like I go through a few years of frustration too behind that.
Trying to figure out how to go from making nice little songs to getting them in the tunnel.
Till we got to Biggie.
Till you get to Biggie. So we'll get there because there's stuff between.
Oh, now you want to hold up.
Well, now we're in the thick of it. Down. Now we're in the thick of it. What machine are you using at this point?
1200 950.
Now both. Okay.
Yeah, listen to the drums, man. That's SP-12 drums with the 950 filtered bass line.
Yeah.
Pow, pow. Same hi-hats Pete Rock uses. Anybody who uses SP uses these hi-hats.
I won't say what it is. They might come after all
of us.
Nah,
I know what it is.
Type 2, you know what it is?
Yeah, I do.
No.
Let's see. You did the song I just listened to last week. I didn't realize you did this.
That's a question. That's the statement I always get.
I'm sure. Well, a lot of them I know, but this one I didn't realize because I love. This is my favorite.
What's up, AZ?
Yeah.
Maintain it, G. I'm saying tough titties. Somebody got Peter Rosenberg
record. Jazzy and smooth.
Yeah.
Well, even with that, it's like I was kind of tight because, like, when you're on albums with like Pete Rock and Premier, you want a record to stand out. So by then, everyone's talking about like Rather Unique and you know Mo Murda. And it's like, I'm like, fuck. So, and working with AZ is not the easiest dude to work with either.
Why? In what sense?
Because he's super picky.
Brooklyn.
Super picky.
Yeah, right. And AZ's our guy. Super Brooklyn, for sure.
Super picky. He my dude to this day. We still work this day, but he's still super picky. Him, Nas. I can work with him now, and it's easy. I can work with Nas now, and it's easy. Because it's like now, as a producer, you develop and you know what they need. And it's like what they sound good on. Finesse was super picky, and Big L was super duper picky.
Really? Even from the beginning?
From the beginning. L used to disrespect me with the beats. Like, yo, dog, that shit whack.
You're like, bro, you don't have to go that far. You can just say it's not for you, thanks.
Just say skip.
Just say skip. Go to the next
but
one. This,
but it's dope because it's like when you have that, that's what makes you go harder. So me and L is basically, we basically doing the same thing at the same time. I'm learning beats at one time, and he's recording his first album at the same time.
Now, hold on. You did, it says here, it's like, you want to hear another joint that he did? You won't be surprised by it, actually. I mean, you won't be surprised by any of them. And maybe you'll remember. But it's funny. You actually do have a sort of a knack for doing, I don't know, some artists that were great and the songs were known, but for whatever reason... The credit just wasn't really out there like that noticeably.
Street records, kind of.
Yeah. I can tell you about that one, too.
See? Because it's funny. A lot of these songs are songs I love, but for some reason, the producer always slipped through the crack on me.
I mean, now listening to it, it sounds 100% obvious, but...
This sounds just like Ozone on OC album.
Yeah, it does sound just like Ozone.
Same vibe, and Raider did all the scratches.
What? I mean, I guess I didn't know you did this.
I don't think
it wasn't in the tunnel, remember?
No, it was. This was definitely in the tunnel. Early.
Early in the time.
Early.
Not prime early. Time.
No, not prime time.
Prime early. Time Riz, is when DJ you want to be there.
DJ Riz would play all these records early. Yep. This definitely was in the tunnel, son.
Really?
Well, we came prom time.
Like, yeah, by the time you got there,
you came drunk hours. Like, this was definitely like a lot of dudes in the tunnel just nodding their head like, yeah, that's that shit.
Early time. Let's see, Sife, do you remember that? Do you Fast Life, you did original or remix?
Original.
The original Kool G Rap Fast Life?
We went away to do that. That was the first time I was in the studio with Nas.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Tell what was that
where?
It was regular because like you find out that these guys want to be produced and you know they're not looking for you to be like, oh shit, I'm in a studio with Nas. That's right. Probably what goes on now. But it's like they want to be produced. They want to know what's going on. Same thing with Jay-Z. He's in the studio. He wants to be produced. Same thing with Biggie. So you can't be in a studio and be starstruck with Jay-Z, Biggie, and Nas. And even with that, I found out me and Preem was the only dudes who worked with all three at one time.
The only you and Preem are the only ones who have worked with
Jay-Z, Biggie, and Nas.
And Nas. Damn, you did Jay-Z, Biggie, and Nas. That's right. And we'll get there in a second.
Champagne wishes and caviar dreams. A team that's getting cream. Michelle's a fist girl from Triple B's.
I
clean. Living a life for rally.
Packing my name. Rally.
Rocking Lizard Valley. While we do a drug deal in the dark alley. Up in casinos. Just me and my Dino Primo. Pushing Beamos. Then Pauly and Reno. With two
flying. That's 95 too.
Yeah, I thought this was like a Trackmasters or one of those.
It's very, it was very Trackmasters-y.
But they used to tell me
record too.
Yeah, they did.
They was once was telling me like I need to do R&B. It's like I used to be like, nah, I don't want to do R&B.
Oh, make R&B records or use R&B samples?
No, I do R&B records. It's like, yo, you got melodies and
you got soul
stuff that
shit,
you know.
Yeah, you ended up doing some, obviously.
Yeah, I did the Faith record.
The
I
Faith
love
one
you.
Is crazy.
I did work with Babyface. I was with him for about 8 months.
Really, just doing what?
Working with him. I did a song for him, and I did programming for him.
And what was Babyface like? That's a different. That's a different level.
It showed me. He showed me the parallel between hip hop and R&B. How it's the same. Like in being with him, it took away like, you know, the jitters. Like, hey, you know, well, can I do this? Like R&B is kind of foreign. And he's like, nah, it's basically the same thing. We just operating with loops.
Right.
He's like, if you're doing a hip hop record, it's like if you got to change up, that's basically the same thing. He just showed me what was.
That's crazy.
Very cool guy, down to earth.
He did you see
Kenneth?
It?
Kenneth was a cool guy. Did you call him Kenny?
Hey, what do you call him? Face?
He said, "Call me Kenny." So we walk in. We
baby,
like, what up, Kenny?
Baby, what's up, baby? Nobody wants that.
You can't say that all the time.
Baby,
can't call a grown dude baby at all times. What about this one? You like this one, Sive?
Shades of X and mood blue.
It is. It is
for y'all.
People often see me in jams and be thinking I'm high. No, that just leave me lazy. What's your reply to that?
Now, fuck, how are the checks for all these records? Let's get in your pockets like I like to do. In these early days, before you get to the big ones, and we'll get to the, you know, but at this point, how are the checks for these one-offs to these artists that we love? Albums that maybe sold 100,000 copies.
A lot of samples.
How were the deals back then?
Steady. It was... It was
consistent.
It wasn't like...
He was on every album. You had an album cut on everything.
Everything.
At least.
Damn near for a while, but it wasn't like, let's say, being around Biggie, you know. Being in Daddy's house was the one thing that influenced me to be like, yo, you need hardware. Like, all these records is cool, but when you go to Daddy's house, everyone had hardware.
What's hardware? What do you mean?
Plaques.
Oh, plaques, yeah.
Who? Who do you remember who used to see and go, I need to be like that?
D-Dot was there, yeah. Orchestrating the locks and orchestrating Biggie, and he used to tell me like, yo, you make dope beats, they just ahead of your time. I'm like, what the fuck do you mean by that? And that's what I'm saying in my mind. He was one dude, like he was always in the dude corner where it's like, yo, you got dope joints, just keep coming through. So at the Big Dot, that's how I got cool with D-Dot. That's how, you know, I kind of end up with like Black Rob and all the rest of the records there.
Well, we'd be remiss if we didn't spend some real time on this one. Now, did you do, when you worked with Biggie, was this in studio together?
I was there, and I was there for the mix. I worked with Biggie before with Red Hot Love a Tone, you got to remember that, for my niggas.
Mm. Wow. So that was way bad. That's 93 or something.
Was beginning 93. That was the best session ever.
Why?
Because it was just, everyone wasn't on yet, and it's like, it was just, we just had fun and just had jokes the whole session. It was me, Finesse, Biggie, Akineli, Red Hot Love a Tone, R.A. the Rugged Man. It was wild people there.
And for people who don't know, I'm sure by this point people know that song, or at least know the sample, because it was used on other things. That was in that time when Big was just jumping on a lot of, like, him and R.A. the Rugged Man. He was on like three joints with R.A. the Rugged Man.
Cut Renaissance and Puffy. Yeah, they didn't want to clear it. And that was one of the best records ever.
Yeah, like he was on all these crazy, kind of weird, offbeat underground records. And this one wasn't as offbeat, but still just underground. And ended up being, did it end up coming out at all or bootleg only?
What, Cunt Renaissance?
No, for my
Red Hot Lover Tone.
For my niggas, it was out. It was a B-side this single.
So for Red Hot Lover Tone?
Yeah.
So when it comes,
Red Hot Lover Tone. You know what? I realize people don't know shit.
That tone is from Trackmasters. Yeah, we got to get him up here too. We've been talking about that for 7 years. I'll see him somewhere. Like, he's very important. And yeah, people don't realize that he's the same dude.
They have people say, yo, you have a magnificent discography. They have a magnificent discography.
Yeah.
Like, the ones, I always say this, the people who you don't hear of, sometimes they're less glorified than a lot of these other people. And some of them haven't really done as much.
Nah, it's true. It's funny, you know, like when we sat here with Salam a few months ago and you just go through after another and you're like, holy shit, bro. Man,
Salam shit is crazy.
And I know you know because you and him are close, but like I didn't even quite realize a bunch of them. I'm like, man.
No, Trackmasters too. Trackmasters is endless.
But let's say this though. Trackmasters had that run where it was well documented and people knew. Right. So before and after they
still
did
a lot. Before the run and after the run they had some joints.
But at least there was a time when everyone was like, oh, Trackmasters.
But in the industry.
Yeah.
It's not like they were like Pharrell is dope, but Pharrell is in the videos.
Trackmasters
was behind the scenes, like them and like Salam. And it seemed like these guys who were just straight about music. They were about business, because I can remember Tone telling me, like, yo, man, you know, we make shit, but it's like, yo, they respect y'all. Y'all do, like, nods, and like, niggas, like, y'all getting checks. Y'all getting heavy checks. Why do you want the respect we got? Don't trade that. So when they got nods, it's like...
Well, because they got... But Trapmasters got knocked for a little while, too. They got put up, and then there were people like, I don't want... Like, it wasn't like an aggressive, like, Puffy-like resentment, but there was a period where when you saw the Trackmasters thing, you'd be like, I know how this is going to sound.
They ushered in a new sound.
And they ushered in a little bit of a shiny sound.
It was a big sound, and it's like, working with Tone and them, they showed you, like, okay, cool. Instead of just having a kick, snare, hi-hat, and a loop, you can layer everything between, like, Trackmasters and Hitman. It's like, okay, well, we can make these records where it's like we can orchestrate and put different instruments on top.
Yo, the Trackmasters brought in the Triton keyboard. The Trinity and the Triton. That was the first ones to really use it on hip-hop. And it was like, what's up with all these fucking keyboard beats? These keyboard beats is whack. And if you're like an underground head that loved samples, it definitely did sound different for a while.
Yeah.
You know?
They did. It was written on it. It was written, was definitely a dope album to me.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the best. Like, it's always Illmatic. It was written, but it's like I say, it was written.
Wait, you're saying you're balancing between the two? Because you're talking crazy if that's what you're saying.
I take it was written because he shows the growth.
All right, we need you.
It's the growth on that
studio.
But he's a producer. He was already by that point.
He's a fuck face if he's saying that.
He was not a fan at that point. You're already a producer.
We was listening to Illmatic when we had the cassette tape with 7 songs for like a year.
Mm-hmm. You bootleg.
And you still like it was written more. If you had to choose one to sit with,
I would listen to It Was Written.
I do hear it every once in a while. I know that it sounds like crazy talk, but I will stumble. I interviewed Schoolboy Q. Prefers the second one to the first one. Like, you know, there are people who definitely, for whatever reason, they hear something on the second one that they like better.
Well, to me, when I listen to Illmatic, the only songs I really listen to now is like New York State of Mind and One Love. I listen to New York State of Mind on repeat for like 3 hours.
What about World Is Yours?
I listened to it too much. It kind of burned me out.
It burned you out, right?
It burned me out, but...
Memory
Lane is cool, but New York State of Mind is just like...
I agree. You nailed the best, too, I think.
It's a movie. So when it drops, it's like when you hear the... Boom, boom,
no, New York State of Mind is one of the greatest records ever.
Is that it? Now, do you think now, Syfe, if you were forced... No one's ever asked this.
What?
To pull one off Illmatic. It's New York State of Mind, right?
New York State of Mind, hands down.
Like, what do you mean pull one? If like the favorite joint?
That's it. Yeah, you get one. It's got to be that one, right?
It would be out of three records. New York State of Mind, The World Is Yours, and One Love.
Yeah.
Yeah, New York State of Mind to me. It's like, that would I be remember when I first heard me, it. I know everything about like, oh, that shit is amazing when it, now, but you know it still doesn't sound.
You know what, you know what else is amazing? The beat in the background.
Yeah.
Which we're dancing all over. So
this is the Hot 97 bed record.
Yeah, oh my God, is it? By the way, Syfe, I'll tell you,
you're welcome for that because I put that in.
Yeah. You put this in the system? Yeah. You still hear it to this day.
All my records are Hot 97 best.
Yeah.
My lifestyle, all the shit. Yeah. So when I look, I'd be like, yo.
That's all me. I loaded all those records.
Thank you, Syfe. I got to let me at least dab you up for that. You know what I'm saying?
Flex was like, yo, put all these instrumentals in. So
so now, this right here, by the way.
So real quick. I used to load these records in, right? The instrumentals for Flex. But he didn't want other people using them. So he used to make me name them.
Weird shit?
Whack shit. He goes, yo, call that, Onyx Freestyle.
No, he wouldn't.
Yes, I swear to God. And I had a key sheet that had the fake key name and then the real what beat it was.
What a piece of shit. He really is a piece of shit.
But then eventually people caught on. They just went to like date added and whatever new shit I loaded, they would figure it out.
Now, hey, a lot of people would, I gotta tell you, a lot of people would pull this one off Life After Death. If they had to pull one joint off Life After Death, a lot of people, probably myself included, it's right there in the conversation of the top few songs of the album.
No hook.
Well, I'm going to say this. Let's go back to the magazine times. That's why I be saying a lot of writers don't mean shit. That wasn't one of the records that they was talking about.
You wouldn't get this first listen.
Mm-mm. But it's like, you got to remember, music's supposed to stand the test of time. Mm-hmm. And it's like, when you look, like, a lot of these journalists, it's like, I've always felt that they've been a key of fucking up hip-hop also, because it's like, they dictate to the audience what they feel like, yo, this is what you need to listen to. You know? The only album, and it's like, they hit it on the nose is two, and I think Minya did both of those. It was the Outkast album and Nas's album.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Every other album that became...
Minya's Misinfo.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, well, I shouldn't have blew her name.
No, I say her name. I say
I'm just saying, I'm just telling but, you the know, audience.
That was, wait, why don't we have... Why haven't we had her on One Epstein yet?
Touche.
Are you fucking serious?
I'm giving y'all all these great ideas.
Yeah, you are, Buck. Always the backbone of great creativity. So how does this happen? They call you and they... And how does it... Did Diddy hit you?
Nah, Biggie.
Biggie himself.
So I don't really deal with, like, middlemen. Most of my times, I'm dealing with the artists. Like,
right, because so you make the ones that the artists want to do.
We're cool. So when you look at it, Big calls me. This is when he had his accident. He's like, all right, yo, I'm working on my second album. I need some beats. And it's like, I can't move, but I want you to meet C's by the bridge. So I meet C's by the bridge, and it's like, I give him a cassette. The cassette had a song which was supposed to be a beat that the Locks picked. Both of them picked the same beat at the same time. And he didn't pick this one yet. And it was a few others that he wanted to use later. You know, we'll get to that. But when he hit me back a couple of days later, he was like, all right, this is the one. And I'm like, fuck, this is the same shit the Locks picked. So
what beat was that? Did it ever come out?
Never came out.
Oh.
Joe got a song to it. It's sitting on the deck. It's kind of cool when three people pick the same beat, but
yeah, I guess, you know. And yet it's not out.
No, it's not out. I don't do that.
I know, but how crazy is that? Three people who know their shit loved it enough to go, I need that, and it still hasn't seen the light of day.
Yeah. It's like Premiere has a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, well, sometimes it's too good. It gets too, it's almost like there's too much around it and doesn't end up coming out.
Yeah, that's like having Nas songs. I've got Nas songs sitting on a drive that'll never see the light of day. I got songs to sit, but it's like I'm not thirsty for to be like, yo, let me just put this out so I can have some content. If I need content, I'll just make some new records.
All right, so keep going. I was about to go down another path, so let's keep going with this record. So,
all right, so Big calls and
he picks the Locks one.
He picks the Locks one, but then about a week later, I get a call, and it's like, you know, having a real bad day. I get a beat, and I recognize the 757-0808. So I get a call. Hey, Puffy needs you to come to the studio and lay this beat. All right. I'm like, okay, what beat? So they play me the beat. I'm like, okay, cool. So I go down. I lay the beat. Beat is laid. Come back another day. Biggie has the rhymes. Think he laid it already. When I came back, he relayed it, and he relayed the outro. Same day we mixed the song. So we could go back in time. It's like Tone picked that beat for Foxy when she was doing her album,
mm-hmm.
and she told Tone it was the worst beat she ever heard in her life. So we're mixing the song, and Foxy's there with Gavin. You know, this is the best time in hip hop because everyone's cool with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she's like, she tells Big, like, yo, she's the only person I ever heard say this. Yo, Big, this is the best song on your album. And I look and I call Tone. I'm like, yo, remember the beat you picked for Foxy? He's like, yo, you know, she just told Biggie it's the best song on the album. He's like, yo, man, don't listen to her, man. She don't know. She could have had that. I was trying to push it on her. And, you know, from there, that's where, the, you know, it all started. It all went from there.
And how do you know more about the story of the song than anyone else? Or are you just like the fans listening to the song?
I don't know nothing about that. I never asked them about none of that. Everything's always speculation. It's one song that always resonates because it's like because of the thing with the play of the New York Knicks and all this other shit. But it's like Biggie was so witty that whatever he's made, even when he talk about Dawson Jermaine, people really believe it's a dark-skinned Jermaine. That's just how dope he is as an artist. And it's sad that even today we don't have these type of artists where it's like these type of things that resonate. He makes characters and it's like he makes situations that just
like
seem
Gloria
so real.
From a story.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I want to know who that bitch is, yo.
Right, right. And you don't know, right. It could just be some random shit that he said, but he's so good at it that and the image is so vivid that it has to be real.
We don't push the artists like that nowadays. A lot of these artists are just...
Well,
they need production.
So I'm guessing that led to this.
Y'all get ready to put y'all later. Up on something, man.
A couple years later.
Yeah.
Like 2 years later, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
You
know what I mean? That shit is
wrong. Did you anticipate this becoming what it became?
Nah.
Black Robbie? How could you have? That? Why would Black Robbie?
Now you got the tunnel records you wanted.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
was it a story to tell? So was story to tell tunnel record too?
Yeah.
Yeah. But not like this.
Yeah,
not
this
like
is a club this. Banger.
This is one
this
record.
A single video club banger.
This record has a lot of. This beat has a lot of history too.
Why? Wow, what was the history of this?
First time I did the beat, I remember we was in session. I played it for Pun. Pun said it was the worst beat he ever heard.
Pun said that.
Pun's like, yo, go that way. You gotta remember, I used to be. This is the dude we used to be with like all the time. You know,
that's why we gotta get Pun stories. How did Pun not?
Nah, every beat ain't for everybody. I learned that after a while.
Nah, this beat by itself.
It was perfect for Rob, for what Rob did.
Yeah.
Because Lenny from Rockefeller, he was like, yo, we need this beat. Don't play this beat for no one else. So he took it to Bleak. Bleak didn't like it. He took it to Mill. Mill didn't like it. And he took it to Jay, and Jay didn't like it. And then the record comes out.
I like it. But I can see how people wouldn't like it.
It's like you gotta have the right song to every beat.
No, but you're right. You know what? When you think about it in that context, it makes you give Black Rob credit for really hearing what to do with
it. Even I got a story to tell. That's another beat I gave Jay and them. And when Jay was like, I seen Jay before we did in my lifetime, he's like, yo, why you ain't give me the beat you gave Big? And I said, yo, I gave you that beat. Hip Hop's walking down the hall. Yo, Hop, didn't I give you that beat? He said, yeah, it was on a cassette.
What did you end up doing for In My Lifetime?
We did Lucky me and Stevie J.
That's right. How was
remember
Stevie J?
Stevie J is a musical genius.
Stevie J was. Remember that Stevie J? I love that Stevie J.
Yeah, it's like. They know,
love it. Hip hop Stevie J is a piece of shit.
No, I wouldn't say that. I still speak to Stevie.
I do too. I love
but him. To me, he's a musical genius.
His music back then, son.
Even now.
He
played
shit he crafted. Like,
times you'd be wrong. You know what I mean? Motherfuckers go around and hate it.
Yeah, look at you, these flossy ass sounds of Stevie J.
Huh?
Flossy ass sounds.
But it's funny, like when like now you hear like this is Lil Wayne favorite record. I got a call like, yo, Lil Wayne wants the instrumental to fucking recut the record. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah, no? But were you in there like, Stevie, you lightening my drums too much, yo? My drums is too light.
Yeah, like he took the beat and he redid the whole beat and stripped it, but it's like I like jazzy musical stuff. So even though sometimes I make some real hard, gritty stuff, but I like that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I can rock with that. Like, that's cool for me. And it's like, just listen to it. I just wasn't sure how people would perceive it. But then later, as years go on, you see people be like, oh, you know, what's your favorite song? Little Streets is Watching, da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
Oh, Lucky Me. Oh, word, you like that? I'm like, okay, cool. I could live with that.
And is that your only J record?
Yeah, I need another J. Well, I should have been on a Black album. I was in a transition of I remember we had the two ways.
Mm-hmm.
Jay was texting me crazy on a two way, and I got a BlackBerry. I threw the two way behind the couch. Found the two way one day. I see all these texts from Jay, and I'm like, "Fuck!" I go to Rockefeller. I see Lenny. Lenny's like, "Hey, yo, Jay been looking for you. He's been listening to Word Life for X amount of months."
Crazy.
And wanted to get that sound. It was fucking with the sound.
I don't know what he wanted, but I just know it coincided because it's like, I wish I had the SkyTel pager now. I had at least a good 7 to 10 texts back to back every day.
They weren't called texts back then, right?
No, two
called?
Ways.
Pages, yeah. Or whatever.
Pages.
So when you look at two it ways. And then for Lenny to say it, I saw you two way, man.
Yeah.
You know?
I got to tell you, Buck, as we go on, the story gets crazier because you said you're the only, you and Primo are the only guys to do Jay,
Biggie and Nas.
But you also did Big L, and you also did this.
Cream Shatterer.
So not only did you do the big three, but you also did Pun and Big L, which is like
the other bigs, the three bigs. From out like Adam and Eve from the garden. I'm carving my initials on your forehead.
So every night before bed, you see the BP shut off the forehead. So what happened with this song? This is the version of the song everyone knows from the mixtapes or whatever.
That's
and then the album comes
too.
Out. And real quick, and I say this with no disrespect, because I'm sure I'm friends with whoever produced the other one too.
Domingo.
Oh, I love Domingo. That
it's
one
a
is
remix.
But that one's shit compared to this. And I love Domingo. Domingo has joints. But it didn't sound right because I knew this
Black
version.
Black
that,
too, though.
That version got quotable. From what I hear, it was a rumor that Puffy paid for the I Dare You sample when it's like it was a clause that no one can use it.
Mm.
But for him, that was a rumor.
Right.
But for him, we was at Showbiz birthday, and I seen Pun. Like, he's like, yo, man, what's up? You know, my album done. You ain't give me no beats, man. I was like, all right, I can use some beats. I was like, all right, you know, well, shit, the budget is gone. I was like, well, shit, just pick a beat. I'll just give you the beat. He's like, yo, you want to give it to me for free? I was like, yeah, let's just work. So he picks the beat, calls me the next morning. Y'all wrote the best song ever to your song. We went to Mystic out in Long Island, Staten Island. And this is the only time I ever seen him lay a song with no punches. Pulled up in the studio like this, cropped up on the stool, set the mic up, and he ran through the whole song.
Damn.
No punches.
Yeah, no, you can tell that it's that's straight through. Way more
you
than other
stuff.
You know
the pun addition with your hosties is unofficial. Wordplay,
yo,
breath control. And when it came out, they gave him quotable. Like, Riggs told me, like, yo, I was so mad. So many people were mad that this song didn't make the album. Steve, they should have gave me a plaque for Capital Punishment anyway. It was on the sampler, but everyone was mad. Everyone who bought the album was like, yo, this is not the version.
And I feel bad because this beat could be good for something else.
This is the version?
Yeah. But for this, because you already knew the original, it didn't sound like it worked to me.
Like
shattered dreams like
Jordan, the sword bad of your team. Like night and day. Will be brought from Rap like Adam
and Eve from the garden. I'm carving my initials. Same recording. To
every night it's a remix.
It's just a straight remix. Off the reverse that, a curse at the first whack. Nigga with the worst rap, because he ain't worth chat. It almost sounds offbeat. Like, just not, there's something about it that's not right. Because you could tell he so is on the first, the original version. And then you ended up putting that on your little, on the EP, the vinyl EP. That was when I was finally able to get a good crisp copy of it on vinyl.
I put two records that never came out there, that and Burn Me Slow.
OC?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted that on Word Life and it's like, nah, we had fights about that.
And you did Bonafide. Did you do Bonafide too?
Yeah.
So that was the other Jay-Z record you did.
It ain't really
the Jay-Z and OC and Jay-Z.
This generation, they count when you got a side record. Like, I never worked with Busta, but Busta was on Come On With The Get Down.
Oh, my God.
So when you look at...
Oh, my God.
I forgot.
When you look at it, people...
No, Buck, no more talking for you.
People be like, yo, well, who you work with? And it's like, I have to answer, like, well, who haven't I worked with?
We skipped over the 95, 96, 97, strictly vinyl college radio Buck Wild era, like...
We fucked
so
up.
Many
we
joints.
Really fucked up.
Hold we could have did a 2-part series.
Yo, what? Hold on, real quick. Before we get, because I'm pretty sure this is the original version. I think, but I think the remix is on here too. I thought that one's dope too. Don't get it wrong. But I'm pretty.
These xylophones, yo.
But I'm pretty sure that on they included the remix. Yep, there it is. It's on Spotify. Yo, you're an asshole. This one right here. I transmit the fatness over whackness with my Campbell blunts and matches. All the rappers try to catch us, but I roast them up for practice. So act like you knew where you'll be through in your division. I've been waiting and watching for you to fuck up your position. I destroyed this record. I would do terrible cuts on it over and over. Well, what else? What other remixes from this era were there?
Was it like Mad Skills?
Funk Dubious.
He did three
Funk
joints.
Funk Dubious, yeah.
What, Rock On?
Caught Up in the Game, yeah.
You did Funk Dubious Rock On remix?
Yeah. Caught Up in the Game, Bushwhackers. It's a lot. It's like, I can't even remember half of them. Because it's like you're going to the labels and it's like every week they got something for you to do. Yeah. Oh, you're here? You want to take a crack at this?
Yeah.
Oh, the Madism remix?
The Madism remix, bro. Yeah. That's like, I got to a point where I started playing that way too much because I loved it so much and I realized, I'm like, shit, I got to play the original. Because people know the original really well, but that remix, hold on, people have never heard it. Because I know we got to wrap this up, but I know there are some people here who haven't. Who we're going to be talking about songs that you and I act like everyone in the world knows them. Because
yeah.
We're the all knowledgeable. The most high. But they may not know it. By the way, and I don't know if we'll have time to play it. The Funk Dubious remix was great too.
Thank you.
What do you mean we don't have time? Where you got to go? You got to date?
Well, I have another podcast. And Ant texted us and told us they have another podcast.
Oh.
There's reasons galore.
I know you're digging this type of shit right here. We about to spark it on the mic. Yeah. Come on.
I'm forgetting one, too.
It's a bunch.
The episode starts when I walk down. There was another AZ joint that was big. I'm back.
Yeah.
I'm back with big. And Fat Joe, you forgetting Fat Joe.
My lifestyle is huge. One of your biggest records, right?
That's a tunnel banger.
I don't know. I just make them and put them out.
Yeah, this is phenomenal.
This isn't done being used. This belongs in a movie somewhere. The beginning of this movie, this song. Yo, Flex loves this song so much.
So much.
Right back at you, motherfuckers.
It was originally from a Flex album, right?
Nah, the remix was on K-Slay, one of them? Or Flex?
I thought it was on a Flex album. The
remix with Jada, right?
Yeah. Was on like the Tunnel album or something. It was on something.
It wasn't on the Tunnel album. It was supposed to be on the, I don't know.
They're supposed to be using the song. It sounds.
But to Take a Look at My Life, that was on K-Slay's album.
Take a look at my life.
Take a look at my life. You can see that I'm from the Bronx where we used to get in G-Packs.
Who's that?
The other shit with Joe talk about, you know, I'm here. Oh. It's like things is good. The birds is singing. That shit.
Yo,
Flex,
man.
Played that all the time, too. That's why I said I have to
what
think.
What are you doing now?
Me?
He's on Uber.
Yeah, I got to pull up. I got to get a ride. This day is crazy. It's my last day of work of any variety. I mean, this isn't work. The only reason this is work is because I have something else I have to do afterwards. Otherwise, this would just be pure joy.
Oh. But are you gonna hit that pickup button?
Yeah,
that UberX.
I'm about to UberX. But here's
why you always hit it so early, and then they always got to call you like I'm coming down. Why don't you just do it downstairs?
I'm not hitting it yet. I just want to have
you
it
look
prepared.
Like you're ready?
But 4 minutes.
Okay.
So if we hit it as we're taking our picture, 4 minutes, boom, 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 I'll walk right in.
All right.
Buck, are you happy though with the notoriety
what kind of
you
question
have?
Is that
the ultimate question? Like, do you feel that you've gotten your due, or are you a little too beneath the radar for your liking?
Well, I'm beneath the radar, but I'm cool with it. I love the fact of being able to have to play records for people and have them say, oh, you did that? I didn't know.
Yo,
it's not that I didn't know. Like, even it's not that I forgot.
Like the last record I did for 50, Financial Freedom, it was one record that went bonkers on it.
Oh, yeah, and you've done 50 a few times too, right?
Yeah. Game.
And Game.
Nas. It's no one. That's why I say this generation is so crazy because it's like, I don't count like Buster and Eminem and a couple of people, but if I want to say I work with these people, because Eminem rhymed on Time's Up at 8 Mile, I can say that. I'm one of them people where it's like, it don't count unless it's a record where it's like,
you don't have to
sign for it.
By the way, that's crazy. Have you ever come close to working with M?
Nah, Paul should send me a ticket so I could go to Detroit. You're cool with Paul, right?
Yeah.
Tell Paul to send me a ticket. I'm pretty sure it will be worth it. I might be one of the only dudes where it's like, well, you hear a dude and you understand what it is. It's like, I'm from that time. All right, like, the last record I did for Nas is the beat I made for him. You wouldn't understand. So I made the beat. I gave it to AZ. AZ didn't give it to Nas. I called Salam. Salam gave me a number to call. I sent it to him, and that's the beat he picked. After a while, as a producer, you get it. Like, Timbaland understands it. Pharrell understands it. When you're in the studio with a person, you know what they sound good on. You know what's their liking. All of this, send the beat in, and, you know, this is why the game sucks.
Riggs never tried to get you with M when he was over there? It just never happened. Whatever reason, it never happened. You never know what
happened. I need to talk to Paul.
Right, right.
Yo, Paul, if you're listening, send me a ticket. Right. I'm pretty sure it'll be worth it.
Especially because that moment of M rhyming on those songs is pretty memorable historically.
You got money from that? From the 8 Mile?
Everyone does.
Yeah, remember, we just
OC.
OC was saying that's a nice check.
And it came after.
Yeah.
It was like a legal. So
8 Mile is always on.
Always on.
Two, I think, between that one and Shaft, they put Woe in where it's like a minute and change.
Oh, yeah. In the remake.
Yeah, and
what do they put in it?
Woe.
Oh, Woe's in the remake?
Yeah.
And what the fuck is his name? State Property 2? Like, they took What a Thug About and put through the whole movie. That's another record where people come and they be like, yo, this beat that's playing through the movie, I didn't know you did it. It's like when they go back and they listen to the record, they like, oh, shit.
What's the biggest... This is like your question you always ask. What's like the biggest one?
I don't know. It's hard to tell. Because it's like every record have a different impact.
Do you remember
like publishing check?
Yeah, most consistent check that when you see that one, you're like, yes.
When I see the statement, it's all
jumbled up, right?
Oh, damn, they're the same because everything fits something different. Like I get a lot of licensing for movies and shit like that. So
I think it's Ozone. I'm just kidding. I know. I love that song though.
Hey, I love it too.
Hey, Buck, thanks for making time for us.
No doubt, man. I'm glad.
And if there's ever a situation which, like, there's an artist out that you just would like to get to hear something, if either of us could play a role to send something along, Cypher won't do it. He's a piece of shit. But I'm happy to send it along.
It's so cool.
You know, listen, if I ever had an opportunity to send, let me sell you. Let me come in and be like, oh, y'all never heard of Buck Wild? Let me play you a few of his joints. Because that shit that you have is, I mean, even knowing before I had you what you had, it's still overwhelming when you hear them back to back.
Thank you, sir.
It's an elite class you're in, my friend.
Thank you.
And makes me proud because it's from DITC, too.
It's crazy because when you look at it, when you're around Preem and it's like, and Paul and them, like these dudes where it's like, I looked up to and it's like, when they see
Paul's
me and they tell
professor.
Me. Yeah, large professor. For those who don't know. Like
the extra large P.
Extra P.
I call it the Illmatic crew. Like those guys, it's like for them to recognize besides, you know, like my crew, you know, it's an honor because it's like,
yeah.
I used to play they shit. Like these guys is incredible.
No. I agree. I concur.
I mean, and the fact is, all those guys that we love, you've had more commercial hits than probably all of them. Just saying, it's one thing that you probably have on all of them. Commercial?
I think so.
What's Premier's biggest commercial hit?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
What's Pete and... Well, Pete has Reminisce. He'll always have that. But Large Pro? These are the greatest producers of all time. I'm just saying, you get to know that you have your own. They may have more underground bangers if you add it all up, but you hit a certain level that a lot of them never got to. As far as like radio smashes that weren't sellout at all, like you kept it completely. It's not like Woe is some. It's not like you stepped out and fucking glossied up your style to get Woe or My Lifestyle.
Nah, LP told me that. He was like, yo, man, you made the only bad boy record that I ever liked.
Exactly. Oh, he's slurping. Nah, he means besides Biggie, though.
He must no, be. He was dead ass.
He's besides, like, not including Biggie.
This is a Biggie but you album gotta remember, cuts like, that are fucking underground
bangers. A lot of underground cats, and I won't even call them underground. A lot of cats really felt it. As soon as you say bad boy, it's like, oh, man.
They got too affected by it.
Yeah,
they let it all get.
Yeah, like Biggie's first album is straight hardcore.
What? And not to mention, and probably 40, too. Yeah, 50, 60% of the second album, too.
Yeah, 40, 50, it's polished though, but it's like
it's polished.
The way Stevie scored it, it's like a movie. And I tell people, if you want to hear arrangement, like these guys who play keyboards over records,
yo, listen,
that's the best ever.
I think before you ever even try to produce, if you put Life After Death headphones, you have to sit like on your couch or in your bed with headphones and listen from front to back. It's fucking phenomenal.
Listen to surround sound. When you hear it, everything
all the
that
shit,
comes
yeah,
in
the,
and
the
up.
The music comes from the left and the right.
It's bonkers. Hey, Buck, happy holidays, and thank you for doing
this. Sir. Same
happy
you,
holidays? That's what we're doing?
Sorry, it's tomorrow's the holiday. It's the day before.
What is that?
I know, you don't do it.
12 days of Christmas.
But I'm just saying, though, this is a non-perishable...
It's endless. It's timeless. Happy holidays every year from here on out. Forever, okay?
Every day is Thanksgiving.
Exactly.
That's what my man Mayhem says.
Hey, peace out, motherfuckers. Happy holidays to everyone.